The American people has been shocked and outraged by the recent revelations that the quiz shows, which had intrigued and delighted them so much on television, had been rigged. The contestants, who week after week matched their wits, knowledge, and memory for fabulous prizes, to the mounting excitement of the viewing public, have now been disclosed to have been briefed beforehand, apprised either of the questions or the answers or both, and together with the sponsors of these programs, to have conspired to perpetrate a shameful hoax on the millions of people who watch the shows and who were assured in every way possible that the contest was scrupulously honest and unrehearsed. The questions had been kept, as we were told, in bank vaults prior to their being put, and guards were on hand, and the contestants were asked to step into isolation booths to ensure that not a whisper of help from the audience would reach them. All this, of course, is a form of cheating, which even as children, we were taught to shun and despise. In school, for example, or high school or college, we were punished if caught at it. What is cheating in the classroom? It is an act by which one hopes to deceive the teacher or the school into believing that he knows more than he really does, to receive grades which he has not earned, and class standing or promotion or a graduation certificate which he has not merited. Actually, the cheater does not rob the teacher or the school of anything any more than the fake quiz shows rob the viewing public of anything. But the cheater does something infinitely worse. He lies and involves innocent people into playing along with his lie. And the lie thus becomes the technique of advancement. And when cheating is practiced on a large scale and dramatized on a TV screen, with millions of unsuspecting people drawn into a gigantic fraud, and hundreds of apparently respectable and trustworthy people, and some very prominent ones, are secretly briefed and bribed and corrupted beforehand to perpetrate this hoax, then serious damage is done to a people's faith in honor, in integrity, and in character. And this is a form of moral corruption which no society can long tolerate without endangering the very foundation of its life. A great American, Emerson, summed it up when he wrote a long time ago that every violation of truth is not only a sort of suicide in the liar, but it is a stab at the health of human society. verbal fraud, our rabbis declared, is even worse than monetary fraud. Gadol onaat dvarim me'enoat mamon. And giving a false impression is a clear case of deception. Now, why was the American public, which had so warmly welcomed and applauded these quiz shows, why has the American public been hoodwinked? There were some Americans, you may recall, who had mental reservations about these shows from the very beginning, because of the astounding sums of money which were awarded to the winners. Awards which in some instances exceeded even the Nobel Prizes, which are awarded internationally only to those men and women who have made truly original and very significant contributions to science or literature or to the cause of world peace. And these Americans, who had doubts about these programs from the very beginning, were concerned that our people, and especially our young people, were being given unwholesome lessons in getting something for nothing, in easy money. Big money could be earned not only by honest toil and industry, but even more so by clever guessing. Feats of memory. You guessed correctly who was or who were the third baseman in the second game of the first World Series or some other such vital and important statistics, and you get a breathtaking trip to some earthly paradise with all expenses paid. The majority, however, of the American people who viewed the quiz shows not only approved of them, but praised them highly. They looked upon them as valuable intellectual entertainment, which promoted greater respect for knowledge and learning generally. For the first time, the hero of a TV show was not an outlaw or a sheriff, but a bookman and a scholar. And it was exciting. It was exciting to watch the open encounter of minds and to check in the process on one's own knowledge or ignorance and to leave the scene determined to become better informed, ourselves to become better informed in the future. Now, why then did the TV industry choose to corrupt this widely praised and valued program and to place it in the same category with fixed price fights and phony wrestling matches and rigged horse races? The answer is a very simple one and a time-honored one. Profits. And the public be damned. Profits. TV stations and networks must make money. And their income is derived not directly from the viewing public, not from subscriptions which are paid by TV viewers, but from advertising sponsors. And these sponsors are interested exclusively in reaching the widest possible audiences in order to sell their products. And the popularity rating of a program, the rating system, determines its real value to them. It is therefore they, the sponsors, who influence, control, and in the last analysis, turn out to be the final arbiters of any TV program. And these sponsors are interested not in education or morals, or in improving public tastes or standards. They are interested in detergents, in deodorants, in pills, in cosmetics. They know their public. They have taken an accurate measure of it. And they have been assisted by experts in public relations and salesmanship. They know how to reach out for a mass distribution of their products, and they gear their programs to a level of intelligence and taste compatible with this sole objective. And if fooling the public will attract a larger viewing audience and increase the sales, why, the sponsor will certainly not hesitate to resort to it on account of some moral peccadillo. He will try to stay, of course, within the law. And there are practically no laws which can be enforced against TV shows, except perhaps those of blatant indecency and obscenity. But as regards ethical and moral principles, why, he is not in business for his health. He knows, or he thinks he knows, the public to be gullible and easily deceived. It can be duped and hoaxed, and it doesn't really mind if it is bamboozled. The sponsor or his high-priced advertising expert is possibly aware that 100 years ago, a man by the name of Abraham Lincoln declared that you can fool some of the people all the time, and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. But he is satisfied to fool all the people, or most of the people some of the time, provided he can rake in the shekels in the meantime, hoping that some of the time will not be too short a time. Now, this, of course, is not true of all sponsors. Some of them have a real sense of responsibility towards the public and towards truth and decency. I have seen, and so have you, sponsored programs on TV, which have been fine and commendable in every way. And they were not necessarily highbrow programs, which only a minority of our people could enjoy. There have been and there are first-rate programs of delightful entertainment, sports, comedies, and dramas, and music, and science, and news, and travel, and discussion of national and world topics on TV, for which we can all be grateful. But there are enough of the other kind, the kind which really dominates the TV screen, which not only gives rise to an occasional public moral scandal, such as we are witnessing today, but which brings into our homes so much of vulgarity, so many objectionable commercials, so much violence, so many programs of crime, so many so-called westerns, so much of slugging and gouging and shooting and gangsterism. The general watchword of TV programs today seems to be, have gun, will travel. Hardly a program without gun smoke, without mobsters on their malls, without saloons and whiskey and kicks and blows and broken glass and furniture, and hero and villain rolling on the ground and clawing each other like savages. The moral, of course, is never overlooked. There must always be a moral. The moral is, now, the hero is he who who is the quickest on the draw. That is how, in every instance, justice and morality are firmly vindicated, and all is then well with the world. Now I ask, why is the American public served up such cheap fare? Such stale, worn-out, repetitive plots whose inspiration is choked up like some old drain. Why is the public held in such low esteem? And what do these low-dive spectacles do to the millions of our children and the teenagers who watch them? To what are their minds and souls awakened? What scale of values, what standards of conduct and morality are set before them for admiration and emulation? Now, the sponsors of these shows tell us that this is what the public wants, not only wants, but demands. And theirs is not to question why. They never suggest anything to the public. It's the public who makes the demand. I wonder whether the public, in whose name everyone speaks, this protean, mobile, mutable, amorphous being called the public, I wonder whether the public really demands this trash that is served up to it, and whether it simply acquiesces in the absence of anything better. And are we also to assume that popularity is the sole and only criterion for programs of mass media entertainment, which are sent into millions of our homes through very valuable channels, which are licensed to stations and networks free of charge by our federal government? Should there be no other consideration? Is this how our government wishes our youth to be educated? For remember, there is no entertainment of such massive scale and frequency that does not inevitably become part of the essential education of our youth and of their pattern of behavior, even if it is not formal school classroom education. Should the sponsor alone, with his avowed special interest and exclusive criterion, should he alone determine what should be put on the air? Does this really serve the best interest of a democratic society? And do our strictures really involve the issue of freedom of expression? The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, which licenses television stations, was interviewed recently in connection with the rigging of quiz shows, and also about the types of TV programs which have generally come under criticism. He was asked about this fraud which was perpetrated on the public by the quiz shows. He thought that it was merely a deception and did not constitute legal fraud. Therefore, no action could be taken by the government. Well, but what concerns us here is not a question of law. Doesn't everyone have a responsibility towards truth, regardless whether there's a law about it or not? It is not a question whether the TV industry has violated any law on the statute books. It has done worse. It has flaunted basic moral principles upon which our whole society rests. The great industry, which reaches and influences millions of people, must do more than observe the mere letter of a law which may be tardy and may lag behind the necessary controls and regulations which a swiftly developing new industry like TV requires. It must think of its social responsibilities, of preserving, if not of elevating, the moral tone of our national life, if it is unwilling to contribute to the refinement of our people's taste, it certainly ought not to contribute to their coarsening. Now, this chairman of the Federal Communications Commission was also asked, what control does the Federal Communications Commission exercise over TV programs? He answered that, statistical reviews apart, practically none. You get reports that show how much time a station in a network allots to crime shows or quiz shows or westerns? No. Has the FCC ever taken action against a TV station or network because of the type of the program? Again, no. Has any TV station ever been denied a license renewal, for they must be renewed every 2 years, on such grounds? Again, no. And all this, the chairman opined, all this is as it should be. For we must safeguard at all costs freedom of expression in the United States, avoid censorship, and, mark you, and the danger of chilling creative art. So, dear friends, when you next behold the purveyors, of hairsprays and lipsticks, of braces for tired blood, and pastel-shaded tissue paper, present for your edification rigged quiz shows and fraudulent contests, or lurid scripts about crooks or gutter melodramas, you should applaud them for what they really are: saviors of our democracy, intrepid champions of creative art, and the stalwart defenders of free expression in our beloved America. Some centuries ago, one of the greatest of the champions of democracy and freedom in the world, the English-speaking world, John Milton, declared, "None can love freedom heartily but good men. The rest love not freedom, but license." My dear friends, behind any claimant or exponent of freedom of speech or of art forms and expressions, there must be conscience, conviction, moral conviction, a sense of responsibility. Free speech must not be used to hoodwink people, to deceive them for the sake of pelf and profit. How then shall we meet the present situation? Well, there are three agencies, three units, three bodies involved: government, the industry itself, and we, the people. Government has a stake in it, a great stake, not only because it is interested in the moral and spiritual well-being and health of its people. It has a stake in it because it grants licenses to these TV stations. Government should become more vigilant, far more than it has been. This attitude of the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission is far from satisfying the requirements for government participation in this large-scale educational process of the American people. The industry itself should police itself. It is an important industry. It is here to stay, and we all wish it well. But it should and must become more sharply and fully aware of its responsibilities to the American people. It is a public trust. It has great possibilities for good or evil. It must uphold standards and contribute its share to what we're all trying to do. Make this a better America. Give our children a healthy moral climate in which to grow up. After all, this is the fundamental criterion in which we are all interested. And above all, we the people should make ourselves heard more fully. We should voice our criticism as well as our approval. These same TV sponsors who so assiduously court and coax the public and spend hundreds of millions of dollars in the process, these same sponsors are very sensitive and amenable to public pressure. If we are sick and tired of what they are dishing up to us, let us tell them so in clear, unmistakable terms, loud and often. And if the program is especially delightful, the sort of program we would like to see more of, let us tell them that too. If enough people turn their dials off on the cheap programs, then the sponsors and the industry will soon become aware of it. The crusade for TV decency, in the last analysis, though not exclusively, the crusade for TV decency is in the hand of the TV dialer. Of us, the public, in whose name everybody speaks. Let that part of the public that feels keenly about these things, that is alert to what is going on, let this public speak up. And the industry, I'm sure, will listen.